Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Adam Griffith back on the show. Adam is one of the co-hosts of the very popular YouTube series, The Crappie Chronicles. We talk about The Crappie Chronicles. We talk about some of the recent episodes there that are really, really fun to hear about and some behind-the-scenes stuff. We also tackle one of the very popular topics in ice fishing right now, especially here in the Midwest, and that is spooky fish, how to handle situations where the fish are being spooky. Adam does a great job sort of breaking down some specific scenarios that he's been in his experience. I think there's a lot to take away from this for all ice anglers, no matter what species you're after and where you're from. I think this is something that we're experiencing on some level everywhere, and he's got some really, really great ideas and just some examples of what he's done to find success in some of those tougher situations. So a great interview here with Adam Griffith on the JMO Podcast. Making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing. Basically, anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. Yeah, what's the fishing update? I guess, for a timeline here, you know, people that are fans of the Crappie Chronicles, you guys just put out the first episode of your South Dakota road trip. So I suppose we can talk about that. I know you guys got more stuff coming out.
So yeah, that's we got exciting. More stuff.
Yeah, it was
a fun trip. We didn't know what to expect. You know, we've never been out there. And you don't really hear crappies talked about a lot, except on a few lakes, you know, like down in that Lake Thompson area, kind of, you know, that's where we heard, you know, most of the rumblings about crappies. And, we like to go to places. Yeah, we went to one lake that was known in the area to have panfish, you know, that was, you know, fairly commonly fished. And but the rest of the lakes, they were lakes that crappies weren't even on some of the surveys. We just heard through people, through the grapevine, seen some pictures, you know, of fish that were supposedly in these places. And we went out there and, you know, put in the miles, and some lakes were a bust, and, you know, some lakes, gave us some crappies. And it was a great time. I mean, everybody will see, you know, what's coming and after the first episode. But I mean, the first episode is kind of leading into some amazing things that happen in the next couple episodes. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, man. And from the looks of it, it didn't look like you guys hit them every time, right? You got in that first episode, you tried some lakes where you didn't even find much, but what a cool part
of
the world.
Yeah, we fished a lake right before the second lake, and we spent like 3 hours out there, and We actually seen a couple fish, but I don't think they were crappies. They were they moved around very fast. They wouldn't let you really drill on them. They wouldn't like run away. They just kind of disappear on the bottom, and then it was basically hard to see them. And we could kind of tell they weren't crappies just by the way they were acting. And we covered the lake as much as we thought we needed to. We checked every depth zone and every inside turn, every entrance to a bay. We checked even in the bays, but yeah, I mean, it was just dead of what we were looking for, and then we go to the next lake and we smacked them really good. And so, it's definitely like that out there. There's a lot of, dead water. We did notice that, and it's hard to keep your, momentum when you just keep, every hole you drill, you just don't see anything. And, you've covered miles, and then you're starting to think, man, is there even fish that live in these lakes? Because some of those lakes are massive, and you're covering miles and you feel like you barely scratched anything. And then, all of a sudden you run into them and it's just like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's why you put in the time and put in the miles, especially when you haven't been there before, to kind of dial it in. And it seems like every lake out there acts differently too. Because they're just all so diverse, even though they're all, connected or relatively close to each other. But I mean, you could fish one lake that had weeds, go to the lake right next to it, and it doesn't have a weed. It's got trees, or the next one's got roadbeds. And it was just crazy the amount of different structure and how each lake was its own dynamic, even though they were literally like a mile away from each other, or even across the street from each other, how different they were.
Those specific situations, like every lake being different, sort of, breeds its own little story. When you do run into fish and how it plays out, and that's another kind of part of the topics that I want to get into. Of like the big picture topic here that I want to talk to you about is like spooky fish. That's definitely been like a big learning curve for me. Utilizing forward sonar. Like you said, every time you go to a lake, it's a different thing. And so it's kind of a specific situational conversation. It's not like somebody knows something about spooky fish that you can just necessarily take everywhere, because each lake has its own flavor. You're going to find the fish doing a little bit different things, which might dictate, your plan of attack when they are spooky. And so I'm kind of curious about that, diving into specific situations, whether it's a weed thing or whether they're in the basin or whether it's contours, break lines or suspended. Like, I'm sort of curious about all of those different elements, with the big picture being like, what do we do about fish being spooky in these specific situations? I'm curious about sort of what your experience has been and kind of what your opinions are and some of your theories on how to capitalize on them. I think we can, with forward sonar, we can all kind of find some fish nowadays. I think if you're not around fish, you know that you just got to move, and all that. But once you do get into a zone where you're seeing fish around you, but they're being spooky, yeah, man, I'm just sort of curious on just like a rundown of either hypotheticals or your personal experiences and specific situations you've been in where you found these fish to be spooky, but kind of what you and the Crappie Chronicles guys, but I know you fish alone a lot too. Like, what are some of these ideas that we ought to be thinking about, to try to capitalize on some of these spooky fishmen? I know I'm plopping a huge statement, a huge sort of thing in your lap there, but I'm serious if you can just start expanding on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the fish definitely seem to be spookier this year than the last couple years. And I don't know if it leads to how fast our ice froze this year and it got thick, and it's just, and then the lakes turned over, or like changed from dirty to clear so fast too, because that typically happens. But a lot of times early ice, it's usually windy in the fall, so it seems like a lot of those lakes get churned up, and when it does freeze, like there's still some color to them. But this year it seemed like it was calm, the week prior to it freezing. And it just seemed like it froze so fast and so quick. Like there wasn't really a lot of multiple ice sheets, at least out in our area. It's like when a lake froze, it froze solid. And so there wasn't a lot of, you know, wind driven dirt, you know, or sediment being blown around. And then it seems like once it did freeze, the lakes just went almost gin clear, you know, compared to, seems like normally it takes like a couple weeks for it to kind of settle and get to that clearness where I think that with that dirtier water gives you a little more advantage of being able to move around. And then I don't know if the ice is just so clear, like clean this year, that your sound travels better through it. You know, there's not like layers of slush and stuff like that. It's like you drill and it's solid one sheet of clear ice. You know, there's no dead spots in it to, you know, drown out sound. And I just feel like the lack of sediment in the water, and then also the ice being so clear, that just everything is moves through the water way better than it normally would, you know. And I just feel like that's why this year, because everything happened so rapidly and everything cleaned up so much, you know. And it sounds like, talking to you earlier, that like it sounds like some of the lakes out in North Dakota did the same thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think that those are a couple of the factors, you know, that I don't know, we're seeing like just a lot of our dirty lakes that turned over, that turned clear super fast after it froze, are the lakes that are spookier fish. And then the lakes that are typically cleaner and really didn't turn over, you know, didn't turn clearer, they were already clear. Those fish seem to be less spooky, you know, and I don't know if that's because there's weeds, you know, we're fishing a lot of weed fish in those lakes, and, you know, you're fishing little deeper basins, you know, with fish suspended up higher. But yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know exactly what it is, but those are just kind of a couple theories that we, you know, we've kind of came up over talking about it, you know. And like we've had to use our advantage of having four guides definitely helps us out in those situations, because excuse me, a lot of times when you find these fish, you know, you see them on sonar and they're just sitting there in a big group, and then you start walking towards them and they maneuver around you, or they, you know, they swim off, and then you try to get close to them again, and then you'll start to notice patterns, you know. And you got to think of, well, they were in that spot for a reason. They wanted to be right there. And we do that a lot where we'll, one guy a lot of times, like, will sit in that spot where we found him and just wait. And then, like, the other three guys will go and try to see how the fish react to us chasing them down. Because sometimes spooky fish, you just have to chase them for an hour and then they'll just calm down. But a lot of times, you know, what we do when there's four guys, we can kind of see how their swimming pattern is, and we'll start to drill holes, and eventually you can drive them back to the holes, because they, you know, they don't want to leave the area. So they swim off 100 feet, then they swim back 60 feet, and then they go over here 40 feet, but they stay in that area, you know. And then we kind of use the advantage of having four of us that we can spread out, and like now we know their pattern that they're swimming, and how they're being spooky, and kind of get in front of them almost. And then you can kind of hurt them too. You know, a lot of times if it's like, oh, they're 20 feet away, they stop, now they're sitting there, we'll have a guy that's on the other side of the school just start walking towards them and push them to the guy that's fishing on the other side of the school. So you'll just kind of drive them into the people.
Yeah.
That seems to work really well. But if you're by yourself, you kind of, you know, you kind of got to take it as a different approach, because I think, drilling a lot of holes isn't going to benefit you. It's kind of, you're just going to be chasing, because you're never going to be able to chase them back to yourself, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I think drilling less holes and sitting in the area you know they wanted to be in is probably a better option, you know. Otherwise, I think you're just going to be running around and, you know, never actually land on the fish.
Yeah. But I'm curious about breaking down some specific scenarios. You know, you fished a lot of diverse bodies of water, you know, talking about being from the metro and guiding on Minnetonka and then traveling, you know, from Maine to, you know, northern Minnesota and the Dakotas. I'm curious about maybe some specific situations, and even like the more recent one, just talking about that first episode that aired from South Dakota, that, you know, that first group of fish that you guys got on in that episode, I did see that, where, yeah, you drilled like one hole and you guys put your mega live down, and you were seeing tough clumps of you know, you can describe the pattern, but like clumps of weeds and these fish, gosh, the way you guys were catching them, those fish didn't look spooky at all. You know, you guys absolutely put on like a very impressive clinic on those fish. I maybe use that as like a really specific scenario to kind of break down, you know, with this topic of like spooky fish. What did you kind of see there as being the pattern that those fish were on? And, you know, what made it a situation where you guys were able to just waylay them, you know, and almost make it look easy?
Right. Well, what we found in that lake is there was definitely like coontail clumps. There was some other kind of weeds in there, and you would look around with live, and we ended up figuring out that there was like basically a heavy weed line of coontail, and it was running, you know, a certain direction or whatever. And we kind of figured out that when you would move outside of that area, the weeds would turn from coontail into just some other kind of, you know, ratty looking stuff. And who knows what it was. Had a lot of slime on it, you know, that filamentous kind of look to it. And you'd get back to the coontail and it was clean, nice weeds. And what we noticed is the fish were just cruising through that stuff. And so basically what we did is we got onto that weed clump and then we drilled over top of it. And then we drilled basically right on each side of it. So then we were just using that. We just basically got in their highway because we noticed how these fish were running is like you would see them. And they would either be swimming right over the top of that big weed clumps or they'd be swimming right down the edge of them. But there was definitely an edge where they wanted to be. You'd get too far away from it and it would be just bluegills. And they would actually, the size of them would drop down too. And so then once it seemed like the bigger gills wanted to be with the crappies. And so then you would get by that, back by that weed clump or weed line and they would just keep coming. So you would just kind of get in their highway that they were traveling from weed clump to weed clump. And, you know, and that kind of helped us. They weren't spooky because I think they were just kind of cruising around the area. Like we weren't busting them off a spot, you know, like when they're on the basin, you go over to them, they're just sitting on a transition or whatever. I mean, there's nothing holding them there, you know, for them to just swim off 100 feet every time you drill on them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in those weeds like that, like they want to be in those weeds, they're using it for a reason. Whether it be bait fish, plankton, whatnot. But then once we figured that out, we just kind of drilled. I think we only drilled like 30 holes and paint kind of bounced around. And like once we figured out the zone of how they would travel, we just literally bounced around from maybe 10 out of those 30 holes.
You know, the way you're describing it, you know, like having a camera to go down and sort of validate, you know, what, that there was the weed type, you know, that it seemed like for whatever reason, you know, like being able to see the types of weeds. And then I suppose once you look at it on a camera, then that might kind of paint that picture a little better of what you're seeing on live. So when you scan over the other way, you know more about what you're looking at. If you start to see some of the same things, I'm curious about the whole camera work. You guys have done more, you know, showcasing like just like utilizing a camera for like real tangible advantages more than anybody else that I kind of follow. You know, I like watching, you know, YouTubers put underwater cameras down and, you know, with the footage. I like watching fish bite and stuff like that, you know, but you guys kind of showed how you use it when you're sleuthing out a bite. Like you're using it as like a tangible thing, you know, not just trying to create some footage that's fun to watch. It was, you know, as far as that goes, if you know what I'm getting at, I'm curious about that. I mean, you and I have talked about, you know, like you've done the tournaments and stuff like that. It seems like you guys that are kind of, you know, get to that next level of panfish anglers through the ice, like there's definitely something to that. I'm just sort of curious how that played in.
Yeah, we just use everything that we have to our advantage. And, you know, like when you're filming, you got to be efficient too. So being able to drill, like we drilled the one hole, we dropped down, we seen obviously taller, thicker weeds, but then we looked and we're like, okay, there's weeds elsewhere too, you know, and we could see the fish cruising in there. And then Pink got out the camera. And he was like, all right, this is coontail. And then he went over to the side where we were looking, and you could see the weeds were not as thick, but there were still a lot of weeds there. And he dropped it down, and he was like, okay, these are ratty weeds. We don't, you know, they don't look very good. And then we kind of, once we figured, okay, the thicker looking ones on live or the coontail or where the fish want to be, you could literally like drop the live down there and look and be like, all right, we need to drill in this line here and over here, because there's like a, there's a straight line weed line, and then it gets to this corner right here, and then it turns and goes that way. And so we just, once we knew that, we kind of just refined our stuff to right above or right next to that actual weed line. And I mean, it was, it's just the way, like having four of us and the way we just kind of feed off each other, like helps, but then to have it where you can just be so efficient and use the camera to just, okay, confirm these weeds are good. There's crappies, there's bluegills. All right, let's dial it in a little more here, because, you know, you've seen that we caught a ton, but there was a dead time in there where we were like, okay, what happened? Where'd they go? And we literally, like, shifted to the other side of the weed line, and they had just moved over a little bit. And then we figured out, okay, they're just kind of going up and down it, and then they're using both sides of the weed line. So you just kind of would, oh, we're not catching them here. Then one guy would get up, go to the other side of the weed line, which was, you know, 20 feet away, 25 feet. He would drop down. All of a sudden, he'd start catching them while we'd all get up, move to that side of the weed line, and start catching them. And then, you know, we just noticed different things with the fish and, like, how they were reacting to our baits. And then, yeah, but the biggest thing was is just being efficient with the camera, the live, confirming what we thought, and then being able to just be efficient with the holes we actually fish too, because, you know, we'd leave those dead areas alone, or we would, you know, the areas that only had bluegills, we kind of just stay away from those areas. So it definitely helps to use the camera, just to, it's just another advantage, you know, and making you more efficient on the water.
Making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. If you have any fishing memory or fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. This is there's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there, with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description to this podcast. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. But for a lot of people, a camera is such an entertainment thing, and it's inefficient. I like the way you explain that, where people that are just getting started using a camera maybe don't really know what they, you know, you buy a camera because it's fun to buy more gear and have right. stuff. But the fantasy that, you know, a camera is you know, for a lot of people, if you watch enough YouTube, you might think that cameras are just there to, you know, for bite detection, or, you know, get somewhere and you put a camera down to watch yourself jig and watch a fish come in and bite. But that's, you know, a camera is an inefficient piece of gear until it's like you guys had, you didn't break it out until you had located some fish on live. You kind of already had some pieces to the puzzle coming together, and you refined it. You know, you didn't pull that camera out until it was time to kind of refine your situation.
Right.
And that then it went from an inefficient thing where if you'd have just been walking around with a camera to start with, that would have been really slow and painful.
Right.
To you created an advantage for yourself, but it didn't come until you'd kind of already put a few things together. I think that that part is kind of huge, and I would think about that a lot. Especially with a weed thing, or if it's a wood or any kind of a transition thing, if you are trying to be on the edge of a rock pile, you know, it's like my gears are already turning in situations that I've been on. It all makes sense in hindsight. Like, oh, you guys, you know, you guys just made it look fast and easy, but, you know, I'm picking up on those things. Like when you decided to pull the camera out and why, and how you guys were communicating that information to each other. Like, I thought that was excellent. Excellent stuff.
Yeah. And another thing that I didn't say either was, one thing that had helped us really, really well with the camera too, was we got to see how the fish were, how they were setting up in the water column. So like, as we would look into the weeds, you would see all the bluegills were within 1 to 2 feet of the bottom. And then when you would see them coming through, all the crappies were above them and to the surface of the ice. And so then that, like, as we were fishing, it was kind of like we thought about it, and because even Pink, were, you can hear it in the video, he goes, yeah, all the crappies were up high in the camera. So then all of us moved our baits like to 2-3 feet under the ice, and then we really started smacking them, because it was just like, okay, so we see all these fish on live. They're all through the water column. But now with the camera, you just gave yourself a huge advantage to be like, all right, am I targeting crappies or bluegills? Well, the bluegill, if you're targeting bluegills, they're down at the bottom within the first 3 feet. Above that is all the crappies in the next 4 feet up to the surface. And so that really gave us a huge advantage there too, because if you notice, we catch a couple of bluegills right away, and that's just because we dropped down to the bottom. And then Pink was like, yeah, all the crappies were up high. Well, then all of a sudden, all of us raise our baits to 3 feet under the ice, and then it was just game on. It was fish after fish after that. So
yeah, dude, that's huge. But why do you think those fish were durable? You know, talking about the noise factor and the spooky factor, you know, was it, you feel like it was a deal where you guys were just on the X, you were on the best spot on the lake, and those fish just had like no choice but to want to be there? But like, I'm just so curious, because yeah, like, you know, talking about like the spooky fish, I'm sure when you drilled a hole, you were bumping those fish off, but you were in such a highway that if you bumped these fish off, you didn't need them to come back. There was new fish coming through. Like, I think those are interesting situations to try to put yourself in, you know?
Yeah, I think we were definitely on the X, you know, like we were on the 494 of weed lines, and everything just kept going up and down at it. Because, I mean, you'd move around and, you know, you'd get in that ratty stuff and you'd just see gills or bass, and you'd get back over here and it would just be a stream of crappies. And you could see how they were swimming in the video. Like they were just hauling, you know, but there were so many of them, like you said, that if you spooked this group of them, there was another group coming down that weed line, you know. And then I think they would get to this corner, because there was kind of a little corner right there. And I think they would go up there and they would stop, and then they would turn around, because we really never caught them on like the L of the weed line. They were all on the straight part of it. And so we kind of figured out that, are they swimming up to this corner right here, turning around, going back down the weed line to some other corner, and basically just doing laps up and down this area, you know? And then, yeah, I just think we were, right where they wanted to be, you know, or we're traveling, and there wasn't really a spook factor. You know, we didn't notice them really spooking much. But I think having the weeds and then just being up shallow, and, you know, there was quite a bit of noise. So I think they were probably used to noise too, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of spear fishermen out there. So there was guys drilling holes, you know, cutting holes with chainsaws all around us. And, you know, there was guys with spear holes around us. And a lot of those guys, like, we'd talk to them. We had one guy come up to us and he's like, oh yeah, we're not catching too many of them. He goes, we see him swim through the hole. And it's like, well, they're so close to the ice that, I mean, I'm like, dude, that, you know, they can see the people up there, like,
probably,
you know, like they're coming in 2 feet under the ice, and they're like, ah, we can't get them to bite. And it's like, well, dude, you got a 4x4 hole that you're trying to look down at a crappie that's literally looking right at you, you know, like, of course you're not catching them, you know? And it's just, yeah, it was just crazy how much noise there was. And the fish, you know, they just, as long as you were on that weed line, they were fine with it, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, sometimes when you have, sometimes it takes like years. Like, I'll go a whole season and never feel like I got on an X anywhere, right? Like, oftentimes you're fishing either in search of the X and you either never get to it, or, you know, to maybe find some fish on your own. Sometimes, because there's maybe a community of fish houses or whatever, sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm trying to make good on, say, like a, you know, just like a secondary type of area of the lake, just so that I can have fresh ice and have it to myself. But it sort of comes with these inherent, you know, sort of things, that one of them being, well, you kind of got to give up the X to just have your own elbow room, you know, to do work. And that, those are some of those situations where it's a little bit more challenging. But like, how often when you're in search of the X like that, like, you guys kind of plopped on to that one. But if we're going to work backwards, like, I'm sure you've got experiences on this, but like, when you're in search of the X and you haven't found it yet, like, how often do you get in a situation where you're on fish or you're working fish, they're spooky, and you just got to leave them because you're just sort of coming to the realization that there's got to be something better out there? That, I think that's a big part of the everybody's process every day they go out. If they're actually searching for fish and they're not just driving to an ice castle to sit all day. People that are in search of fish and are trying to break down fish are usually kind of living in that in-between part of the day where you're still in search of the X. I'm sort of curious about that.
I don't know. It's hard to leave fish when you see them, you know, because you know they're there. But yeah, usually, like, we base it on, you know, there's four of us. So, like, we kind of, you know, we put our heads together. We kind of look at the school. We're like, okay, do they let you get close to them at all? Do they, you know, are they 60 feet away and you take one step towards them and they swim 100 feet? Those kind of fish, we're probably just going to leave those.
Yeah.
You know, but if you get fish that will let you walk relatively close to them and they don't race off 100 miles an hour, they don't vanish into the bottom, stuff like that, like, we'll actually try to give it, you know, a go and see if we can, you know, figure out how to get them to, you know, eventually we drill enough holes to get them to swim back under the holes, or we've done this a lot where we just follow that school around for an hour, you know, and a lot of times we'll give them about an hour. So we'll be like, all right, we're going to stay with you. You keep moving, we're going to keep moving. You know, as long as they stay in that general area where you found them. If they just start going off into the deep and they're going, you just kind of let them go because, you know, they're not stuck on being in that area.
Yeah.
So, if you notice these fish, they swim off 100 feet, you drill on them, they kind of want to work back. We'll keep following those fish around. And we've had it a lot of, like, quite a few times where we follow a school for an hour and they just move and move and move and we didn't catch a fish. And all of a sudden the school just parks and they stop and they let you drill right on top of them and you blast them. Like, you know, you might blast them for an hour and then all of a sudden they'll be like, all right, I'm sick of this. And they start swimming again. And then you start following them again until they stop. And we've done that a ton where, you know, it's just, you got to kind of read the school. Like I said, if they blast off super far, they're not, you know, circling back to the area, because you'll notice a lot of times the fish will literally circle back right to the spot you found them. Those are the fish I'd follow, you know, at least give them an hour. And then there's just sometimes when, you know, like, we go to this one lake and we drive out there and we find a school and it's literally, if we walk to them and they take off, we just jump back on the vehicle and we leave.
Yeah.
You know, like, we got lakes like that, like, where we know, okay, these fish are, like, if they're stopped and they're not moving fast, we can catch them. But until they do that, you know, and it might be just time of the year, but whatever, like, we'll go out there, check them. They take off, we take off. And so there's just kind of scenarios of fish lakes that you learn that too, you know, like, okay, this lake today is, they're moving. We're not even going to bother with them just because we've tried that. We know they don't stop, you know, and they just blast out of the area and disappear, or, you know, whatever. You just kind of got to read the fish, read the lake. But yeah, I mean, the spooky fish are hard. It's just, and the more people you have for, like, you know, following around, obviously, the better. Like we were talking earlier, if you're alone, it's probably easier to just kind of hang out in that area and hopefully they work their way back.
Dude, that makes a lot of sense. There's levels to this. Like I'm thinking, like I'm organizing this in my brain. It makes a ton of sense, man. I get a lot from your description there of like, you know, just reading how spooky they are. It's not just a general statement that if you're on spooky fish that they're going to be impossible. And but there's levels to it where some fish, if you give it an hour and put in some stealthy work on them, they can surprise you, and there can be light at the end of the tunnel. They will potentially hold up.
Yeah, it is the craziest thing when you're following them and they all of a sudden just park and you're like, okay. And then they'll do it for like an hour and you just beat on them and then they're like, all right, we're going to start swimming again. And then you follow them around for another hour and then they stop again and you're like, okay, what were you so spooky about for the last hour, you know?
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting thing. It's like, how does a fish with a brain the size of a pencil eraser feel uncomfortable around noise that's, you know, 20 feet above their head? Like, right. Like what has ever happened to them, you know, in terms of like, you know, they're just responding to stimulation.
Right.
Maybe they don't even know. Maybe there is no answer to this, right? But it is such a bizarre thing that, like, why would a fish? Because before forward sonar, I would have just never thought that fish cared about something 20 feet over their head, right? We just thought that fish were just existing where they were and we were drilling holes, you know, because we just hadn't drilled on top of any fish yet, you know?
Right.
It's such a weird thing, you know, for me to fantasize that, you know, about the olden days. But yeah, it's like, what are they thinking? And maybe they're processing it. Maybe they realize like, well, none of us have gotten hurt yet. None of us have, you know, our lives haven't been threatened yet to this point. So why are we running away? Why not just hang on?
Right.
You know, why not? Well, I guess
after a while and they're like, okay, we've got enough with these guys, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, maybe it's like fish under docks. They get used to, you know, people being on the docks and boats and all that. And they're just kind of like, oh, whatever. It's the same thing every day, you know? And like with Lake Minnetonka, like the amount of fish that live in the channels, you know how many boats they have to hear a day?
Yeah.
You know, hundreds of them. And they still live in the channel, you know, and they're not even bothered by them after a while, you know, like, so that's a good point, you know, that maybe they just get comfortable with you and, you know, they're like, all right, well, like you said, why are we running away from this, you know?
Like all those things, man, I take it in as an angler that wants to go out and run and gun, but it's also, these are big learning curves that help me in those other scenarios where, when I'm just going to bring my family out, or how I'm going to operate in my ice castle. If I'm going to put out a sleeper shack, I don't like running a generator 10 feet out the door. You know, I'm going to run a longer extension cord or power everything with lithium batteries and not run a generator at all. You know, and maybe put thicker carpet inside my house so that my kids can stomp around and doesn't transmit as much noise. But man, those are all things, man. But what else? What are some other cool scenarios, you know, where you can kind of, you know, see where you had some success and kind of just sort of describe what, you know, what you went through over the course of the day, you know, to kind of figure out or leverage some fish that were ultimately spooky, man. But everything you've said up until this point is definitely fascinating to me and definitely gives me a lot to chew on. But what are some other cool stories?
Yeah, when we were in Alexandria, me and Bart, the last day we went to this lake, I think it was a reservoir. It was on a river, whatever. And, yeah, we went there and fished and man, we drilled all over the lake and we found some, you know, some fish out in the middle and tried to drill on them right away and off they go and never seen them again. And they wouldn't even let us get near them. So we're like, all right, let's get out of here. We went up to this one shoreline, big inside turn. We see fish. We drill on them. They move 30 feet. We drill on them again. They move 30 feet. Then we noticed as we were watching them, they started to trickle back to the holes that we had drilled. I missed two of them. We were convinced they were 90% rough fish because when they would come in, you'd have just like 3 feet of red. Nothing would look at your bait. And the two I did get to bite, they just came flying in. And so we left those fish thinking, yeah, they're just rough fish, you know, with maybe some other stuff mixed in. We went and searched for like another hour, didn't see much, came back to the same shoreline, but went to the south to another inside turn, just thinking, all right, if they're in there, maybe they're over here. We find this school of fish. I mean, the biggest school of fish I've ever seen on live, thousands of fish. And then we noticed these fish were suspended above them. And we're like, well, we've seen that over there, but there was only a couple of them. But here, they're like, there's five there. They're all over the place above this school. And same thing, they would you'd drill on them, the school would split in half. They'd kind of go each direction. But then again, we noticed as you watched them, they would start wanting to come back together and group back up, you know, and they would kind of do it where you drilled. And so what me and Bart did is we drilled, I think we only drilled like five holes. And it was just holes that Bart like was trying to get on. And I just stayed in the original live hole. And these fish would just, so we'd break them apart. Well, they all wanted to be in a group in that massive school. So then they would all just kind of work back to where that dead zone was. Well, that dead zone happened to be right where the holes were because you blew them out of there. So it was a very cool scenario because they came back in. Bart popped a crappie. He pops another one. I popped one. And we're like, okay, we confirmed these fish that are suspended are the crappies. And yeah, we just did that. We basically were like, all right, we know they want to keep working this area with this amount of fish. Like, you know, they weren't like, and when I seen them spook, they would only go a little ways and then they would kind of, you know, they would all group up and stop and then they would just kind of work back. So we just kind of stayed in that area and let them just kind of keep working through us and worked out very well because we got some very nice crappies and a few walleyes. And but it was cool because, you know, how we figured that out of just like being like, okay, I looked at them, how they're splitting, but then they all like morph back together in the area where you just drilled, you know? So, and it might be a couple minutes. So we would just, like I said, I'd put Bart on a hole. He'd start catching them. All of a sudden they'd move. I'd watch them. They'd all rotate. They'd start going back to him and I'd be like, hey Bart, they're coming back to you. And then I just sat in that one hole because they just kept circling me and coming right back under me. And once we had their kind of pattern down of how they wanted to swim and the area that they wanted to keep going back and forth, it was kind of like that weed line. But this was just a break line on a shore. And yeah, we just let them do their thing and kind of hung out and, you know, caught the fish we needed. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool scenario just to see thousands of fish on your live. Like, I've never turned my live 360 degrees and seen fish from 0 to 80 feet all the way around me. And I mean, touching each other all the way around, you know what I mean? Like there was thousands of them. It looked like the whole bottom just, it looked like there was a weed line down there because there was that many of them, you know, they were just stacked on top of each other and just moving across the bottom, just like they were marching across the bottom. And it was very cool to see. And it was cool to get crappies out of a school of rough fish, you know, because we're 90% sure everything else was probably carp, sheephead, stuff like that, because they wouldn't even like react to your bait. And then the crappie would come in and just, you know, fly up and eat it before you even knew what was going on. And then same with the walleyes, like they just come in and slam you. And but yeah, that was a pretty cool story.
What were the fish doing there, man? Was it a flat? Was it a channel, a trough?
Because it was on a river system, and so we're thinking that the current must have flowed down that side of the lake.
Ah, yeah.
Because they were all on that one side of the lake. Like we fished pretty much the entire other half, like all the way up to shore, the other way out in the basin, you know, on points, over humps, you know, just all stuff that was out in the middle. And then we got close to that shoreline, and it was everything was there. And it's like, is the current flowing down this side of the lake? And, you know, everything's just sitting here because of that? Or is there some kind of bug hatch going on in this area because of that? You know, like, you know, was it multiple things? But all we can think of is It had to be something with the current, because the current, like when we looked at it later, the river kind of comes around a corner and then feeds right. It would kind of, the way it was sitting, it would feed right down that shoreline. And it made sense that it come across this flat and then drop down on that inside turn where all those fish were just sitting there on that current break, you know, letting all that stuff just get washed right to them. You know, typical, you know, river fish, they always want to let stuff come to them. So
that's interesting. That is super interesting.
It was super cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another one of those hair pulling deals where so often I'm, you know, if you're trying to put a pattern together, where it's like if I run into some fish in a spot and I'm just looking at say the structure or the cover, and then I try to recreate that throughout the rest of the lake, it doesn't always pay off, and then it's like a head scratcher, like gosh, you know, like I wanted to know that every good rock pile or every good weed point or every good, you know, cup or contour that just matches this situation throughout the rest of the lake was going to pay off, and it didn't. So it's like there was something else about that spot or that area, you know, that made that particular one better. And it's like I'm paying attention to the wrong thing. Of course, you got to go drill holes and fail to work, you know, to learn that.
Well, yeah, right. Like I even said, we left them and we're like,
yeah, who leaves the biggest school of fish they've ever seen? Like you guys are mute.
Well, we just, because when we, the first part when we found them, we were about 200 yards away from where we actually caught all the fish, but it was the same exact shoreline. And we're just like, it just didn't look like 100% like something, you know, like we're not used to seeing it. So,
sure.
You know, we looked at them and we were like, God, they look like crappies, you know, and then we're like, well, these things aren't biting. You know, we got to go do something, you know, like you're trying to film, so you got to get content. And so we just were, well, we didn't cover this part of the lake. Let's cover that quick. And then we both looked at each other and we're like, we got to go back to that shoreline, dude, but let's go to the other end and see if maybe they're there. And it was just like, okay, you know, like, you know, yeah, sometimes you got to leave them to, you know, find a better part. I feel like, you know, we left that section of them to go find the better section of them is basically what we did, you know, and fortunately it worked out. But yeah, it was an interesting lake, especially after being on the other lakes that we fished where you would see fish everywhere, you know, like you would drill on any spot and you'd be like, there's fish, you know, and then you get to this lake and you're like, oh, we found them all here and all these other lakes. You know, and then they're on something that's nothing like we found them on any other lake. And it was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But you got so much clarity. If you can operate efficiently, you can do stuff like that. You can leave fish either in search of fish or just eliminate something over here. You know, you can do a lot in 45 minutes to an hour if you're efficient like you guys are. Which is what I learned from a lot is like, it's okay to leave fish if you're going to be efficient, and it'll give you more clarity later that, oh yeah, we do have to go back there. We do have to go back there and figure that out. But you didn't know that until you went and tried a couple other things.
Right.
And then, you know, it's like you continued to gather information throughout the day that ultimately led to your success. But some of those decisions, man, are just tough for the rest of us. Like, man, it's tough to see a lot of fish and not try to make good on it and just beat your head against the wall. But all the while, if that's all you had done, you might have never made it 200 yards down to where you had a better situation, you know. But it was just like all those steps sort of are factor in, and plus you still had, you had equity in that first spot where you had holes drilled. If you got to go back, you know, we say this all the time, you know, Jason says this all the time. It's like, okay, we're on some fish. It doesn't feel like it's the X. So we got to go check X, Y, and Z. So we're going to leave fish in search of fish. But if you're efficient and you fish well, if an hour and a half goes by and you feel like you got to come back to these holes, well, we've already got holes drilled here. So like, you don't have to feel bad about that. You can come back to these holes, but if you're not being efficient and it takes you 4 hours to go check something else because you're clunky and you know, you're just not built for it to be efficient, sometimes those that's kind of the light bulb going off of like, man, I need to work on my efficiency so that I can open myself up to doing some of these things. I need to kind of reduce my gear. My sled's too full of stuff that I never use, or that I don't need. You got to dress, you know, in things that allow you to be outside all day. You don't feel like you have to set up a house, you know, to fish somewhere for 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, it's like all those efficiencies, man. You can do a lot in a short amount of time that'll just continue throughout the day to give you more and more clarity. And how often it happens in the last hour of the day or the last hour and a half of the day, it doesn't usually happen like that without hard work ahead of time, like without the first 6 hours being a lot of that work and decision and your collaborations. Like, you know, it's, yeah, man, I take a lot from that, man. I think about that stuff too on my home body of water, where I try to forget all the memories I have on my home body of water, or try to forget that I think I know everything on my home body of water, because these are things that a guy should be doing even on a lake. You should be checking new things or thinking about, you know, trying new areas and new theories on these things, you know, especially on lakes that you, you know, like home bodies of water.
Right.
Or how often you spend 20 years fishing one section of your home lake because, you're fishing memories, or you're having some luck, you know, like people are successful on their home bodies of water but they never realize that 300 yards up the shoreline, at least today, you know, like every day's different. At least today, if you'd have been thinking outside the box a little bit, which is hard to do on your home body of water, you know, try 300 yards up the weed line or up the contour, and you can hit pay dirt, you know, beyond what your expectations even were. You know, it's easy to do those things on new water where you don't have those high expectations, right? But that's a big factor, I think, for a lot of ice anglers across the Midwest. 90% of people's fishing happens on one body of water all winter because it's the one they live by. That's their home body of water. But I think these things all apply, especially on your home body of water. And it's fun. It's fun to go out on your home body of water and act like it's a lake you've never been on before.
Right.
And just be checking stuff and just be looking. You're going to find them where you'd never found them before. Or you can refine some things on what you already know or what you already got in mind. But it might take a little bit of this sort of, you know, the thought process, some of these decisions to, you know, continue to make little adjustments throughout the day. Sometimes it only sort of culminates in like two or three fish catches, but they can be big ones and it like makes your whole week.
Yep.
You know, like that's the stuff that I just, you know, that just motivates me when we have these conversations. Like that's, you know, I mean, you already kind of got me thinking about a few things, on that, that I'm excited to sort of try to emulate the next time I go out. But I can tell you, like, I will tell you, because I'll be texting you, like, if I get one good quality, like, big fish catch out of something that you brought to my attention today, like, that is so worth it to me. That'll be such a big deal to me. Like one big, you know, big crappie, or, you know, a school of big bluegills, or like I apply these things to the perch and walleyes that I'm going after all the time too. It's like, you know, these are things that, you know, yeah, being efficient, reading the fish, reading the water, don't assume that you know too much. And I think, yeah, we fall in these little ruts, and spooky fish can put you in a rut really fast. I guess that's the thing.
Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah, and then just not seeing fish, you know, like with us, I mean, I don't know how many times we fished, you know, 6-7 hours a day, and, you know, we're just looking at each other like, this sucks, you know, like you're just drilling and drilling and drilling, and all of a sudden you hit that magic spot, you know, or that magic hour, you know, like when we're in Wisconsin, you hit the, you know, those last 45 minutes, you know, you don't see fish all day, 45 minutes, you whack them, you know. But then other places, you know, we drill around like for hours. And then you're just, you know, your morale is down and you're like, we just got to keep going though, guys, you know? And then you find them and then you're like, and you literally look, you know, you think, you're like, all right, this is all worth it, you know?
Yeah.
And like, we've done it so many times that it's happened that way. So now we just like, I think all of our brains are just kind of like, it's going to be a grind until we find them. But we know, you know, if we put in the work and do the time and do what we do, that we're going to find them, you know? As we're like, a lot of people that haven't experienced that before, it's probably a little tougher for them to be like, well, I'm going to keep drilling for 4 hours, you know, or 5 hours until, you know, a lot of people give up way before that, you know? And it's like, you know, you just keep pushing, you know, you're going to find them eventually.
No, you're right. You can put in that work. A lot of good anglers put in that work and you don't even always realize it, but your energy is going down, you know, but towards the end of the day, you never know what you're leaving on the table when you just, you know, you just get a little bit wore out. Anything else that you want to throw out there? I feel like I've taken up your time here today and got some really, really good stuff, man. I'm super fired up about it, but unless something else comes up on your mind, you know.
No, I just hope what we talked about helps you out, and I'll be looking forward to those text messages with a picture of a big fish.
Dude, I mean, I'm not going to let you get away with it, dude. I take a lot away from it, and I'm always watching this stuff, you know, with you and the boys. It's, you know, even when you don't hear from me, I'm always paying attention to that stuff, dude, and yeah, it's I appreciate it. I'm not so proud. At this point in my career, I've had too many, like, I've learned too much from, like, this podcast and just the industry. I don't think I'll catch a fish the rest of my life that I can take credit for. It's all things that I've learned, you know what I mean? Like, everything that I'll ever do is regurgitated, but one thing I enjoy doing when I'm around other people or maybe sharing my own fish stories, you know, my own successes, is, like, if something cool happens, usually it's, you know, a product of something I learned or picked up or just a gear choice or a strategy that I picked up, you know, from guys like you, and I always enjoy sharing that part of the story. If you know, somebody's in my garage and they're impressed by a big fish catch, it's like, well, I can tell you where I figured out what I did that day, you know, or what, at least what my intentions were. And when it comes to ice fishing, man, you guys have been a big influence on me, so I super appreciate it, dude. But yeah, dude.